And we'll move to our next case this morning, and it is United States versus Robert Jacko. All right, and I see both counsel, so we can proceed. Mr. Carlson.
May it please the court. This court would never allow a jury verdict to stand if a jury or a juror said if the defendant was really innocent, he would have told us or showed us so. Here, Judge Durkin was the jury, admitted he was the jury, and this court should not stand for His Honor Judge Durkin doing so.
Mr. Carlson, is there a distinction, though, for the burden of proof between beyond reasonable doubt and preponderance of the evidence?
Well, yes, there is, but I think... It is a matter of degree. I think the idea that a defendant should not have to prove his innocence remains the same in either instance, no matter what the burden of proof is. And I believe that that is clear. And I think the thing that makes this case a little bit more troubling is that when I brought to Judge Durkin's attention that he shouldn't be relying on the absence of evidence that the defense presented, he said that there appeared to be a wealth of contrary information that could have been presented if it existed. And what's important about that comment is it happens in the very same sentence where Judge Durkin, in the same paragraph of the transcript, where Judge Durkin says that his finding would remain the same, that the standard of a preponderance has been met. But then he goes on to say, but I would have thought, but there would have appeared to have been a wealth of contrary information that could have been presented if it existed. So to the, when he, what he says in one point, he takes away in the other.
Mr. Carlson, why wasn't Judge Durkin just responding to your arguments? And let me give you an example, please. With respect to the cell site information, the court drew the inference based on the cell site information for your client that he was in at the banks. And you argued, well, it's just his phone, and he could have been there for lawful reasons. In response to that argument, the court said it was not persuaded by your argument because there was no evidence to support that he was just there for lawful reasons. The only evidence, which established by a preponderance of the evidence, that he was at the banks and he drew the reasonable inference from, was that he was at the banks at the time of the robbery. Why isn't that just an appropriate response, noting that he's acknowledging your argument but rejecting it because it's nothing other than argument?
I think the reason, Your Honor, is that Judge Durkin noted throughout that there was conflicting evidence in this case. And he kept, on two occasions, he said, you know, I appointed an investigator in this case. I would have expected, and those were his words, I would have expected to hear evidence. So what he's saying is that in the absence of that evidence, he expects to hear evidence that Robert Jacko is innocent. And that is not what the law requires or allows.
But the specific examples that you've given us, the cell site information being one, really do just seem to be responding to your argument, saying he's made the inference that he was at the banks based on the cell site information because you haven't supported anything to support a different reasonable inference. Why isn't that perfectly appropriate? And in fact, what he should be doing. If he hadn't responded to that argument, you might come in and say, he never addressed our argument.
But what he is doing and expecting is that the defense take on a burden of either production or persuasion that the law does not place upon a defendant. And I don't believe that it is appropriate, even in the context that Your Honor is talking about, for the judge to do so.
But he didn't say you had to prove this and you didn't. He said the government has proven that he was at the bank based on the cell site information, and your arguments fall flat because you haven't pointed to anything to support your argument. That's a very different thing than saying the burden has shifted.
Well, but Judge, but in a close case like this, that's exactly what he's saying. What he's saying is, I'm looking at the fact that that you didn't present any evidence on this issue to tip the balance in favor of this. And that's exactly what I think happened here. And I don't believe that that's appropriate.
Mr. Carlson, all three of us, the panel here, have been through the transcript, repeated times. And I look at the bottom of Appendix 15, which is page 9 of document 77 from the district court. And I'll be straightforward with you. It is somewhat thin to conclude just the sheer circumstances of the robberies all being committed in the same general area, coupled with other factors, makes me reach the conclusion it's more likely than not true that Defendant Jocko committed the BMO Harris. There could have been more elucidation there. Does your client, though, run into a difficulty because we're not sure what you hope to gain from this appeal? He doesn't argue there was insufficient evidence to sustain a finding that he did the March 12th, 2:15 p.m. robbery, that this judge made a clearly erroneous finding. What exactly would be sought or would you receive from the request you're making?
Your Honor, it is our belief that if Judge Durkin did not place a burden on the defense, that he would have not been able to reach the conclusion that he did. I think, as I said in my brief, that the tipping point, what tipped the balance, is the fact that the defense didn't present any evidence. And I think if the court did not consider the burden shifting, and then I don't think Judge Durkin would have made the finding that he did. I have nothing further unless the court has any questions.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Rojas.
May it please the court. My name is David Rojas and I represent the United States. The district court's sentence here was procedurally sound. The district court did not shift the burden of proof to the defendant. The district court repeatedly articulated the correct standard of review and burden and made it clear that it understood the government must prove by preponderance of the evidence that the defendant committed the second bank robbery, which was used to enhance the defendant's sentence. The district court found that standard to be met based on substantial compelling evidence, which included cell site location information that placed the defendant's cell phone in the area of the three banks at issue, including the bank that the defendant admitted robbing, similarities in appearance and clothing of the defendant and the perpetrator of the earlier bank robbery, including a visually consistent hand tattoo, and the close temporal and physical proximity of the banks and bank robberies. It was perfectly appropriate for the district court to consider the limitations of the defendant's defense, which essentially was one of identity, that he wasn't the one who robbed the bank. The defendant claimed that the absence of physical proof, such as DNA or fingerprints, established that he was innocent of the robbery, but the district court was entitled to, and in fact was required to, weigh the strength of the evidence. And in the course of doing so, to consider that the defendant's identity defense was essentially a mere assertion unsupported by affirmative evidence. That is not burden shifting or procedural error. But even if the court determines that the district court erred here, such error was harmless. the district court addressed the defendant's concern in its oral ruling, setting aside evidence that the defendant didn't present, determining that it was still more likely than not that the defendant committed the earlier bank robbery. So for these reasons, the government believes that the district court's 80-month sentence was procedurally sound. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll ask by asking you to affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson, anything further?
I have nothing further, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.